I'm here with Rick Wrigley at WUSC's studio and at USC. Now, Rick, you celebrated your 50th anniversary at WUSC this past November. How has the Rick Wrigley that came here to study chemistry in 1963 changed since then?
Well, what changed me was WUSC. I came here as a Naval ROTC, not a contract, but they had the full scholarship program. And I fully intended to have a Navy career, primarily in naval aviation. That was my goal at the time. But when I got here, I ran across a fellow by the name of Steve Warkowski, who was the manager of the station back in those days. And he convinced me to come over. He lived in the same dorm hallway that I did. He managed to convince me to come over here and have a look at the radio station. And I fell in love with the business and fell in love with doing radio. Turned around that first semester in November of 63, November 8th of 63, did my first show, which was a thing called Night Owl. And it was on the AM station at the time, because WUSC was AM at 7:30 on the dial back in those days. And Night Owl was sponsored. We had a sponsor. Coca-Cola was our sponsor. So it was kind of interesting. So it was the mechanics of doing the show, pulling the music, and talking on the radio was all just kind of captured my heart. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I was sort of changing plans to get out of the Navy after serving my tour duty and then getting back into radio. So that's basically what happened.
And I know that in all that time, you've served not only as a DJ, but as a program director, a music director, a chief engineer, and you've worked a little bit in news. Mm-hmm. Now, how does all of that translate to a career in radio now in 2014?
Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of it does anymore. Today, the number of people it takes to operate a radio station is greatly diminished from what it used to be back in the day because of automation. And that's both a boon and a bane in my mind. The boon is it's a lot less expensive to operate a radio station these days because you don't have all those DJ salaries that you have. And the bane is that it's automated, and radio is it's kind of hard to differentiate radio today from being a jukebox or an internet streaming service. I think it's been a boon that radio's been able to survive tough times, but the bane is that unless radio eventually moves back into more live radio or some other way to differentiate itself from the jukebox, it'll never get back to the way it used to be back in what we used to call the golden days of music radio.
Speaking of online radio, I know you do a show at ourgenerationradio.com and one on Replay Radio over in the UK. How does the experience of doing radio online differ from the experience of doing radio in a studio?
It's interesting because when you're doing it online, you're usually doing it from the comfort of your home. I've got a little studio set up in my home, so I'm able to do it there. I've got a little audio board and a computer, which is all you really need to do an internet radio station, radio show these days. But the interesting thing is I'm actually more connected to my audience there than I am when I'm on the air here. When I'm on the air here, I don't have any sense of how many people are listening. When I'm on the air online, I have a pretty good idea how many folks are listening because I get reports back. I also have different ways of communicating with people, one being the chat room on one station and the other being using Facebook chat and Facebook, just back and forth on Facebook pages on timelines to get your requests and dedications and things like of that nature, and what people want to hear and to talk to your audience that way. So back in the day, all we had was the telephone. And so you would hear from some of your audience. They would be making requests and stuff like that. The difference, however, was radio stations in the late 60s, a lot of them had their evening programming coming from drive-in restaurants. And the station I worked for back in those days, WCOS, was one of those stations. So I had a show that was going on from the ground floor right there in the parking lot of Doug Broom's Drive-In on Two Notch Road. A lot of people remember the Main Street location, but he also had a second location that he was promoting back in those days on Two Notch, and that's where we elected to put the station during, I think it was 66 through about 1970. We had it down on the grounds on Two Notch Road. There, you were right in the middle of your audience. The kids were coming around in their cars and eating hamburgers and hot dogs and drinking their milkshakes and flirting with each other and talking to you. And so it was kind of an interesting experience. To me, that was the most enjoyable part of being in radio, being immersed in your audience and having that give and take back and forth in real time. It was really, in my mind, of the pinnacle of the experience from a DJ's perspective.
Now, you mentioned that you use a lot of tools like Facebook and your cell phone and the chat room on ourgenerationradio.com to interact with your audience, but how has that interaction changed throughout the years for you?
Well, like I said, back in the days, we had folks would sometimes send us mail with requests on it, and of course, we had the telephone requests. We had a thing we call the Instant 60 request back at WCOS back in those days, and that was a really big audience grabber and a good way to react and interact with the audience. I typically ran two Instant 60 requests in an hour, one each half hour. And you'd play the jingle and everybody dial up and the lines all go busy and you pick up one of the lines there and you put them on the air and you ask them what they want to hear and you play it for them. An interesting story about that Instant 60 request is I've run into in the last 5 or 6 years a pair of couples, two couples that met each other through the Instant 60 request. And when they were telling me about it, I was kind of like, how did that happen? Well, we had three lines of the telephone. They'd all jam up immediately and everybody else get a busy signal. Back in those days, there was only one busy signal generator, a little device for every telephone exchange. And the 252 exchange, that busy generator would have 50 or 60 people connected to it. And when that happened, the amount of noise, the beep, 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 got lower and lower and lower, and the kids could talk to each other. So these two couples met each other over the Instant 60 busy signal, eventually got married, and they're still together today. So I guess in many ways that kind of shows you how radio used to be what social media is today.
Radio DJ and a matchmaker.
I don't know about that now.
Well, you know, you also work in the technical side of it. You're a technician at two local stations here, the Palm and the Dude. Mm-hmm. How has the technology facilitated changes? I know you mentioned automation, but other than the computerized automation, how has the technology changed the way you radio?
It's very interesting that the influx of computers into all branches of radio broadcasting, not just the automation, but also the selection of music is computerized these days. The scheduling of events in the automation system are all computerized as well. Not only that, but transmitters, remote control systems, studio to transmitter links, all these are now controlled via computers, which means you don't have to have that much human intervention anymore. I got my degree from Carolina in electrical and computer engineering. And when I was first working in radio, I mean, it was a lot of hands-on desoldering components and repairing components if something broke down in a radio or television station. And today, again, because of computerization and miniaturization of electronic components through integrated circuits and things of that nature, there's a lot less of that going on. If something fails, you basically pull the entire unit out and replace it. So the kind of skill sets that we had in broadcast engineering, the ability to troubleshoot down to the component and correct the problem and put it back into service, isn't needed nearly as much as a good knowledge of computers. So most chief engineers of radio stations today are more IT people than they are electronics people. They still have to have that electronic side because you still have to be able to open up a transmitter and replace that final tube or something like that. But for the most part, all the components that used to be in the studio are now computerized. So you have to have both sets of skills, if you will. So, and the other thing that's happened because of that and the miniaturization and the equipment becoming a lot more reliable is now one engineer can cover 5-6 stations. You know, like John George and I cover the three stations that we were just talking about, the Palm, the Dude, and WSC. John is free most of the time, so he is the primary person, and I back him up when he's out of town, like he is this week. So between the two of us, we're running these three, engineering-wise, these three stations. But I've got a friend of mine who's doing 5, and another friend is doing probably 7 in different cities. So it's really different. That side has changed a lot, too.
All right. Well, very briefly, with all of your experience with the technology and broadcasting using the technology, where do you see radio heading in the future?
Radio is going to go either one or two ways. It's either going to find a way to differentiate itself from the music streams, the other music sources, be it Pandora or iTunes or Rhapsody or whatever, and come back into a position of prominence and relevance to the target audience. Or it's going to further diminish into a non-relevant source of entertainment, just another source of music out there or entertainment out there. It depends on which way it goes. I've noticed that you, depending on who owns the station, you seem to have it going both ways. So we may see a shuffling of things in the future.